Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, welcome to another Tuesday here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Anne, the radio chick, along with my host, my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mike.
Well, good afternoon, radio chick.
Man, we've had a chock-filled weekend, haven't we?
No. Let me tell you something. I don't think I've ever had a weekend. Weekends for me kind of go usually really fast. Days go really fast. But I don't think I ever had a weekend go so insanity in all of my entire life. And it actually started here with a lot of snow. And then it's one of those days where everything is going wrong, including the things that are going wrong aren't just going wrong. They're going like the worst they could possibly go. So glad it's Tuesday and glad to be on the show. And really happy because we have a quite attractive guest today, Annie. See if I'll work some of that old charm I used to have from back in the day.
Ooh, you better dust it off and shave that beard.
Yeah, well, I did shave today. And I'm really anxious to talk with our guest today, Pam Geller. By the way, before let's change the subject totally, ladies and gentlemen, as always, our Beaufort County superstar there was at a debate last night. Why don't you tell us a little bit about there? Considering everybody at my house, five of us were like, looking on the sides of the TV, looking in the back rows with magnifying glass for you.
Well, actually, I was not supposed to be at the debate. That was not in the cards. I have to tell the whole story from front to beginning. We had a South Carolina Tea Party convention, and originally I wasn't going to go because it's the economy is hard, so everyone's pulling up tight their purse strings, and I wasn't sure if I was able to afford, a weekend, because it's a 3.5-hour drive, so we rent a car, you have the hotel stay, you've got your meals, you know you're not going to sit in your room alone. You're going to go out and meet people and cocktail and so forth. And I didn't know if I can afford to do all that. Well, as it came around, we said, all right, fine. We've got the extra bucks on put aside. Let's do it. So last minute, we make the arrangements. We send it out to all the other Tea Party members, get a couple other people on board, rent the car. Okay, we're ready to go. Well, Friday after we got off the air on the show, my cat took a turn for the worse. And she had a huge infection on the side of her face. And it wasn't there the night before. So I thought maybe one of the other ones scratched her or something like that. So I rush her to the vet. They drain it. It's really nasty. They send her home with antibiotics and everything else. You know, just keep an eye on her, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's today, Tuesday? No, so this happened Tuesday, I'm sorry. But the following Friday, we had the show again. That's when Tim Scott came on. And, you know, starting the show, I'm saying, she's not looking too good. And she's lying on the floor behind me and saying, she's really not looking too good. I get done with the show. I call my husband. I say, honey, I think we're going to have to take her back to the vet. She's taking a turn for the worse. So we take her to the vet. Sure enough, they run her blood. She's anemic. She's this. She's that. We got to run some tests. And, of course, she hadn't passed a stool in about, I don't know how many days. And there's this Lincoln Log in her, and they have to give her an enema. And I'm like, oh, God, we're leaving tomorrow. What do we do? So I talk to the doctors, blah, blah, blah. We're going to leave her there over the weekend. They can monitor her. They can give her the enema that she can do whatever they want. And, you know, we'll know she's in good hands. Well, I get a call later on. She may not make it through the night. Now, we're supposed to leave that next afternoon. She comes through the night. She's eating. She's feeling better. Her color's better. Okay, good. I go to the vet. I spend about an hour there petting her, talking to her. She's perked up. I says, okay, we're ready to go. Doctor says it's fine. So we go all the way up to Myrtle Beach. We go to check in the hotel. And it's this one of these big resorts. You know, it's multiple buildings. You know, they've got this miniature golf in there and so on and so forth. But it's an old resort. So he gives us the room, and we get over to the building. It's a three-story walk-up. Well, anyone that knows me knows that I am disabled. I can go up the stairs. Three stories is a challenge. I can go up the stairs, but if I try to come down the stairs, I have to come down one leg. You know how you stiff leg down the stairs? And you come down the stairs, steps just one at a time? You ever stand behind someone trying to come down those stairs? You just want to push them out of the way and roll them down the stairs. Well, I don't want anyone to do that to me. So now we go from this building all the way across the resort lot, back to the registration, and go in and explain, you know, I'm disabled, blah, blah, blah. Can you switch the room to a building that has an elevator? Oh, yeah, fine, no problem. So they switch the room. They put us in this room. It's got a gorgeous view. Yeah, I mean, right there on the beach, overlooking it. Matter of fact, on Southern Sense, I put up the pictures up on Facebook the other day. Beautiful sunrise. I mean, I sat there in the morning looking out, and there's this group of three people, they're horseback riding down the beach. It was so cool. And
wow,
after
that does
sunny,
sound cool.
I mean, perfect, perfect sunrise. But we get to the room. The toilet is broken. You go to flush it, it keeps on running. The paint is peeling in the bathroom. The vent light isn't properly hung, so it's partially hanging down from the wall, and the paint is peeling on that. And you look around the room, and there's a drink straw on the floor, and my husband and I are looking at each other, and it's like, oh, no, we're in the hotel from hell.
I love your text message. So everyone who's listening, I get a text message like, oh, my God. She says, hotel room from hell. And I should tell Yanni to improvise.
At this point, we're tired. We're hungry. We just want to get a bite to eat, get a drink, and hit the sheets. And I'm checking the sheets to make sure they're clean. So the room is cold, so I'm trying to find the light switches. And I'm telling you, I think they built this bathroom in a phone booth. The light switch is over the toilet behind the door. So in order to turn on the light, instead of reaching in and reaching over normally to your right or to your left to the wall directly there and flipping a switch on, you have to open the door, close the door to reach behind to get to the light switch.
Jeez.
So now I'm trying to find the other light switches in the room, and they're in some of the most unusual places. So we finally get the lights turned on, and we're exploring the rest of the place, and I says, all right, we've got to turn the heat on. There's the thermostat on the wall. So I go over. It's one of these punch, finger punch pads, you know, whatever. You call them touch pads?
Yeah.
And there's these two pads that are punched out. I mean, there's just holes there. And I'm trying to hit the on. It's not working. Hit the on, not working. I'm going, what the? You know, WTF? And I go, I have no heat. And I'm looking around. I don't see any other thermostats on the wall. Then I realized that what they did was they must have taken the old system out and they put one of these standalones into the wall below the window. Now, the real reason I realized that is because my husband used to do handyman work for a nursing home, and he used to have to replace these when they broke down. So I realized what had happened. So I go over and I turn the heat on and says, oh, great. I mean, this finally, we got the heat. All right, let's go get something to eat. We find this place in the phone book called Mamma Mia's Pizza. And, you know, I check online, I go in and check to see what the comments are, and everyone's raving about the food. Well, they don't tell you where this place is. So we leave the hotel, and this place is located inside another resort. So we get to the other resort up the street, and the restaurant is up on the second floor. Okay, we go up on the restaurant, and we get off the elevator floor, and all we see are these hotel rooms. And then over the doorway of one of these hotel rooms, it says Mamma Mia's. I'm going, no. So we walk in. It looks like they put about maybe a suite of three rooms together, and you have to walk through the kitchen to get to the main part of the restaurant.
Oh, my God.
I tell you, whenever we do something, we go on adventure. We go absolutely on adventure. I mean, the food was fairly decent, you know. It's not New York Italian. It's not Chicago Italian. But it was all right. But we're sitting there. I'm going, we're half in the kitchen and half in the restaurant. And the restaurant had, like, only these two luncheonette booths. And I suddenly realized it's a hub. He's got three other menus there. One was for burgers, and the other one was for Chinese-Japanese. And I'm listening to the guy behind
what?
The counter. Yeah. I'm listening to the guy behind the counter taking the orders. And each one he's answering, he's going, Mamma Mia's, or he goes, Chang Wow, or Colonel George's Burgers or something. And he's answering the phone for each one of the restaurants, taking the orders.
It's like a call center from India there.
No, the worst part is it's these two big old white Bubbas. I mean, I swear the Bubbas fell just off the pick-me-up truck. And one of the Bubbas turned around, and as they're pulling the food out, he bends over to reach something. And I said, that is not a sight anyone, I swear, even a gay guy does not want to see. There's a 6-inch plumber crack. And I'm swearing, I'm not a petite person, but I'm not large. But would it be two of me with a plumber crack? I hope the food is good. I hope the food is worth it.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't end there. It does not end there. We get up the next morning, and I wasn't feeling exactly well because of the heat coming off the radiator. It was dry heat, and your sinuses get all messed up. So I'm trying to get my head clear, and we get ready to go hit the shower. And Yanni goes, I'm going to go hit the shower first. You know, you just relax, and then, you know, I'll have it nice and all set up for you. He's in there for about 10 minutes. I hear the water running. And he finally comes out, and he's still dressed. And he says, what's going on? He goes, we have no hot water.
I love that. I got another text on that one, too. I was getting these texts just like you guys were venting at me in the text.
Now, we have 45 minutes to get to the convention because it's going to start. But we can't take a shower because we have no hot water. So now I'm calling down to the front desk and going, what type of room have you given me? We've got to be out of here in 45 minutes. We have no hot water. I'm freaking out on the guy. So, you know, what happens is about 15 minutes later, we don't hear back from the front desk. No one's knocking on our door. And, you know, I said, Yanni, why don't you try the water now? So he tries the water. I try the water in the sink. We got hot water. They forgot to turn the water on for the floor.
Oh, man.
mean, it just was just one thing after another. But I mean, we had a lot of fun though at the convention, and I don't know if you had read my blog I wrote about it. Did you read the blog I had wrote?
No, I had not started reading anything until like an hour ago. So I didn't need to read about it. I kept getting up to dates every time something wasn't working. You were like, and then you wrote me, she texts me this message, 15 things are going wrong, and like I can feel your anger. And then all of a sudden you're like, and Yanni is driving me crazy. I'm just like, oh, poor Yanni. She's got the poor kitty is sick. Nothing is working. Your husband's driving you crazy, and it's costing you a fortune to have all these headaches.
Well, I'm going to put a link up to the blog I wrote after I had texted you and after I got back to the room. And it's on my Come Your Conservative blog. It's called The South Carolina Tea Party Convention Part 1. And basically I'm telling you what happened. And I'm talking to a bunch of my friends there that, you know, we're having breakfast first before everything starts. I couldn't believe how many of these Tea Party people were staunch Ron Paul devotees, and I couldn't believe it. I was flipping out. I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. You want a strong foreign policy, but you're going to accept Ron Paul. Oh, you don't understand him on foreign policy. I'm like, what part of that debate they had in Tampa when Santorum challenged him when he said, why shouldn't Iran have nukes? And I'm going, what part of that do you understand?
Ron Paul is a strong constitutionalist on foreign policy. Bottom line is that, I mean, I like Ron Paul's domestic policies, but an awful lot of things have changed since 1776. I mean,
if you listen to last night's debate, he said he wants to draw all the troops back within our borders. But
realistically, that type of policy is constitutional, not realistically. What, from a constitutional standpoint, that is accurate. But from a realistic standpoint, that's an invitation for infiltration. Because
as I had said before,
we need to protect our borders wherever we can, abroad or any type of. Not to mention, I mean, one of the reasons we go long periods of times sometimes to have peace is because we don't have Ron Paul's foreign policy. We are proactive in the game.
Well, this is something that has not hit the news, and I don't know why. It may be being kept hush by Ron Paul and some of the Tea Party people that were embarrassed, but yesterday was the closing of it, and then afterwards everyone went into the little things and then went to the debate. Well, at the end, they had it set for certain presidential candidates that said, yes, they were going to come over and talk to the Tea Party. You mean you've got the largest gathering of Tea Party leadership in all of South Carolina, and you want to court them. So the smart thing to do would be to show up and talk for 5 or 10 minutes, press a little fresh, you know, make a good impression, and hope that you've actually swayed some of those undecided. Well, first Santorum comes in. He does a really good speech. I mean, it was fine. And, you know, everyone went, yeah, yeah, thank you very much. And he had the kids and the family there and everything else. He leaves, and then Newt Gingrich comes in. And Newt comes in, and he does a fantastic, you know, speech. You know how Newt can rally a crowd. And it's his forte. He's very good at it. If you believe that the leopard has changed his stripes, and you believe that he's actually had the epiphany and changed, he's made that turn after he married Calissa, and he's actually become a true conservative and stuff like that. If you want to believe that, you know, his speech was fantastic. He said all the right things in all the right places. He had the crowd going. Immediately after following him, Ron Paul was supposed to show up. Now, he made sure that, you know, it was scheduled and so on and so forth. His camp made sure, the Tea Party camp, then everyone was meshed. Well, Yanni was outside smoking a cigarette. And he's watching Newt Gingrich's bus driver trying to maneuver his huge, huge touring bus in his little tiny parking lot. And he was having fun laughing at it. And the driver finally gets it maneuvered in. Ron Paul's bus pulls in. And he had a whole slew of supporters out there. He gets off the bus. They exchange some words, you know, rah, rah, Ron Paul, blah, 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 blah. Ron Paul turns around, does an about face, gets back on the bus, and leaves. He never even went into the resort, up to the room, which was on the third floor, and addressed the Tea Party leadership. He had a handful, about maybe 5 or 10 people standing around his bus, you know, kissing his butt, and he goes back on the bus and pulls away. Now, would you support Ron Paul after that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Did he have a death threat or something? I mean, I don't know. Why did he even stop? I mean, I would think that that would be his... he obviously stopped for a reason. I mean...
Well, that wasn't the end of the story. At that Tea Party convention was my state senator, Tom Davis, the guy you love, right?
That's my man right there.
Tom Davis sent out a press release saying he's going to endorse Ron Paul because of his fiscal policies. And I asked Tom face-to-face, I said, Tom, why are you doing this? What about foreign policies? Foreign policies affect us domestically. And if you want good domestic policy, you have to have good, strong foreign policy. They have to go hand in hand. Everyone keeps on saying this is a global issue now. And you have to think globally. We have to be domestically strong as well as internationally strong. We can't back down and pull ourselves within the borders. We can't do what Ron Paul wants. He goes, well, I'll explain it. And he was there waiting for Ron Paul to walk in so he can get up, introduce him, and announce his endorsement. The egg on poor Tom's face. And I love Tom. Tom is one of the nicest guys. He is a straight shooter. He says what he means, and he means what he says. And if he says he's going to do something, he's going to do something. And if he says, I stand for strong fiscal policy, every single time he has pulled and shown that he has been 100% true. He has never once gone against true conservative values, either socially or fiscally. And then to stand there and you have 100% conservative willing to stand up there and very popular in his district, very popular in the state, and then that is a huge, huge mud pie in the face. I felt so bad for Tom. I absolutely felt horrible for him.
That's horrible. I mean, that's like, wow. That's embarrassing right there. I like him and that sad guy. They're like my two favorites anywhere in the country. Yeah, the one guy who said who made the comment on the show. I said, like, well, what about the other ones? He goes, well, what about him? He goes, I don't care. Yeah, but I mean, that's very embarrassing. I wonder what in the heck he would do. You know, I think Ron Paul is a good guy, and I think he's a constitutionalist. But I mean, he also contradicts himself when he talks about people being in Congress too long. I mean, he's been there for a couple of decades.
Right.
What the hell is he talking about? I mean,
it's that liberal policy, and you got to remember, Ron Paul is very liberal socially. He's fiscally conservative, but liberal socially. So he follows that social mindset that it's okay for me, but not for you. I know better. And it's that mentality.
Well, I mean, we all kind of are like that in many, many ways, but that's very true. If he's talking, people have been in Congress too long. I mean, I think 20 years is long enough, not to mention, I mean, he's a medical doctor, and I don't know any doctors that are struggling financially. Most doctors I know got nice homes, nice cars. But, I mean, just the idea that we need to protect our borders strictly within the confines of the United States, maybe in 1776 that might have worked, but certainly not in 2012. And let's face it, it's only going to get worse. I mean, we're not making many friends around the country. Around the world, I should say. So, I mean, I don't know. I get very confused. I think these debates have gone on way long enough. And I think the Republicans have reconciled what's his name? Who's the front runner? To
Romney.
Yeah, they've reconciled to him, but they're unenthusiastic about him. And I think that could be a problem. But I don't know who's the person to step up. I mean,
I don't know. What you didn't see in the debate was the full audience response when Gingrich was talking, and Gingrich is a favorite son here on, and that's how a lot of people feel about it. We've got Thomas coming on the line. Let me bring him up because he wants to make a comment on Ron Paul. Thomas, you're on live.
Hi, Annie.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. I hope the kitty is doing well.
No,
my dog...
unfortunately, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, I'm sorry. But I just want to say, I just want to say this. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, because my Skype has been tripping like a dirty... Anyway, here's the thing about Ron Paul. Everybody wants to talk about he has good domestic policy. No, he does not. Ron Paul is only saying what he is told to say, because he what you don't hear about is that he's getting a lot of money from George Soros. And so as a result of that, I don't understand how any conservative, if they knew that, could justify throwing their support behind him for any reason. Because I watched a little bit of the debate when he came on, when he was asked the question about the foreign policy. He stammered and he stuttered and he and I had to stop watching it because he was so incoherent. It's like he drank a fifth of tequila and washed that down with a gallon of Kentucky moonshine.
Well, hang on a second. I turned on unfortunately Fox and Friends, and I think Yana and I almost threw something through the TV. But the fact it's a $2,500 TV held our hands. But what they were gushing. All over Romney, all over Gingrich, and so forth. Ron Paul, though. Ron Paul, they were going nonstop on. He couldn't do anything right. He said all the right answers. Did anyone catch his foreign policy answers? When he answered the first foreign policy question, he was doing so much doublespeak. There was a young 19-year-old girl. She was a proud conservative. She was, yes, I'm here. I want to make a decision. I'm getting ready to place my first presidential vote. She was so happy. She's listening to Ron Paul, and I looked at her and said, did you understand anything he said? She goes, not a word. And I said, do you think he's got dementia or Alzheimer's? She goes, yes. And then I turned around to this. There was another young girl sitting in front of me. She was a sophomore in high school, and I said, you're a poli-sci major in high school, right? She goes, yes, I want to go into politics and this and that. I'm really enthusiastic. I wanted to hear what he said. But what did he say? And not one of us could figure out what the heck he said. But, you know, everyone's gushing over, oh, he answered that question so well. Well, if he answered so well, tell me what the hell he said.
Exactly.
Well, and a lot of times, I don't care who the politician is, whether we like this politician or we don't like this politician. A lot of times these people just listen to themselves. I mean, it's almost as if when they hear the words out of their own mouth go through their ears, they're like getting turned on. I mean, it's just like, what did that person just say? Huh? What? I mean, it's just like you don't know what they're saying. And
orgasmic
platitude? My favorite is, I can't think of this guy's name. I haven't seen him in a while, but he used to be on O'Reilly a lot. This guy used every word, had like 14 letters in it. He never just said yes or no.
Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller.
Who used to do Monday Night Football, but he got off of Monday Night Football because no one understood what he was talking about.
Well, it reminded me of Fred Sanford, you know, when that white cop would come and he did talk, and then Fred Sanford would look at the black cop for translation. I would be like, what did this guy just say? And, you know, I think politicians in some way, the ones I like at least, I mean, they're the ones kind of what you had in your interview with New, where you mentioned he sat at the table. He was eating with you guys while he was doing the actual interview. And I like individuals who are just, they have to, of course, say the right things, but, I mean, I like individuals who can just sit with you and look into your eye and talk common sense to you and not use these big words. I mean, who are you trying to impress? That's
exactly.
My point.
You know what? You bring up a good point, Mike. You know, despite the fact that everything that happened with Herman Cain, you know that Newt never bashed. He never made a negative comment about Herman Cain. He's the only candidate that I know of that didn't make a negative comment about Herman Cain in a situation. But, you know, other candidates, they alluded to things. And I admire that about him. Now, on the other hand, I don't fault him. And tell me, Annie and Mike, if you guys think I'm off in what I'm about to say. But I don't fault him one bit for going after Mitt Romney with ads after they pumped millions of dollars against him in Iowa. Because he has said, you know what, I'm not going to attack the candidates personally. But when those super PACs of Mitt Romney went after him, all bets are off. And I'm glad he did it because, quite frankly, it was a dirty tactic.
Well, in a way, yes. In a way, no. It started to backfire him because if you watch, because I had the ability to watch how the crowd reacted, and a lot of them were getting very uneasy and restless. And he must have sensed it too, because after he made those two statements, he backed off. And Newt then did what he does best: be just Newt. One thing that no one else is mentioning: you notice Rick Santorum has not once, turned around and attacked Romney directly.
Right. That's true. That's
and I've
very
been saying
true.
All along, I think he's aiming for VP. I want to remind people that are listening in that have tuned in to listen to Pam Geller. We are still awaiting her call. She did send me a message this morning that she will call in. She has the number. Obviously, something may have delayed her, but we're hoping to have her on the line very soon. So, this is the show scheduled for Pam Geller to show up. We're waiting for her.
Well, we can wait. We're not like we're sitting around not doing anything.
She can end up doing to me what Andrea Shea did. If you remember, she was scheduled for the show, and she finally remembered 15 minutes before the end of the show. She was out there watching the Blue Angels or whatever it was doing aerobatics on the beach, and she lost track of time.
Yeah, you know, let's give some quick shout-outs. We have all kinds of our hosts. Jermaine's in here, and we got Thomas, of course, Malcolm X, Sexy Sammy.
I got
Sammy.
Dirty White Trash.
Yeah, Sexy Sammy calls me in the middle of the night asking me if I know where something is located. Here's something really funny. Samantha lives in Los Angeles. I'm in Detroit or Pontiac, Michigan.
Oh, wow.
How the hell would I know where this is in Los Angeles? She goes, I dialed the wrong mic. Sorry, Cool Mike. I was calling someone else. Click hangs right up on me.
Oh, you know what? Sexy Sammy said that I missed saying hi to her. But if she scrolls all the way back up to the top, the very first person I say hi to is the two guests that were in the room and Sammy. And Sammy then dropped off the line. She signed back in. So, Sammy, shame on you, girl.
Yeah, I think she wants some of that moonshine that Thomas was talking about that Ron Paul slugging down. And she's like, oh, it's Cool Mike. Sorry, I dialed the wrong mic. Just hangs right up on me. It's like quarter to four in the morning.
Wait. Before you get someone else ticked off, you forgot Tesla, too. And Dirty White Trash.
Yeah, Dirty White Trash. And, of course, Tesla, because socialism
is not an option.
So Tesla should call. While we're waiting, everybody should just call in. Malcolm X, you should call in. We ain't had any good debates in a long time.
The call-in line is open, 917-889-3675. I want to mention something else that happened at the South Carolina Tea Party convention. And the South Carolina congressional contingent that was there was fantastic. And they really encouraged everyone to get people out there to vote. One of the speakers is from Raging Elephants, Reverend Apostle Claver. And if anyone has never heard him speak, go to YouTube. I'm going to type his name into the chat room. Reverend Apostle, and yes, Apostle as in the Bible, Claver, Claver. He will be coming on the show later on. He said, yes, we're going to hook up and schedule this. He is a fantastic, dynamic speaker. Absolutely. He was rocking the house, and he was having us go, when I say no, you say compromise. And he had everyone in the crowd was going, no, compromise. You understand what he was trying to do? And then he would do it with everyone. When I say no, you say surrender. And we're going out, no, surrender. It was absolutely fantastic. And matter of fact, Thomas, this is your type of conservative and absolutely phenomenal. And he's up there, he's rallying the crowd, saying everything all. I mean, he had everyone just about ready to stampede out the door and, you know, knock on doors to get people out. But right after that, they had this million billionaire by the name of Michael George of Stay Strong America. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Watch out for this man. I think he's got one oar in the water. His when he spoke, he was monotone and he droned. And he's one of those people that when you're sitting there listening, you start to nod off. And it's like all of a sudden his voice will pick up. It's like, oh, was he still speaking?
That's bad. But
well, the only time he got a rousing response from the group where he thought it was going to be positive, uh-oh, he started up there preaching for Newt Gingrich. And you don't tell a Tea Party person who to vote for. And he's up there telling us we have to vote for him.
Uh-oh.
Well, guess what? The mouth that roared was still sitting in the crowd. And well, the second I open my mouth, here comes all the cameras and the newspaper people. And by the time they get to me, my friends start speaking. So they're racing from one person to the other, trying to write down the quotes. Of course, the mouth that roared turns around and goes, no one is going to tell anyone or any Tea Party leader or group who to vote for. Not now, not ever. And all of a sudden, everyone's standing up cheering. And it's like, I did it again. Hey, listen, we got another caller coming in. Let me bring this person in. Area code 772, you're on the air live. To whom am I speaking? Hello, area code 772. Your mic is open.
That's Tesler.
Tesler?
No, he's muted. Somebody, wait a minute. Somebody's muted Tesler. Hang on.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. He's
all right. No, now he's unmuted. Tesler, is that you?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, sorry about that.
We've got BTR ghosts here. I think we got trolls in here.
We do.
I think Annie is just... Annie, you know something? You're worse than a little kid in the store knocking stuff over. Whenever you go on these Tea Party or wherever you go, it's just
oh,
like
but that wasn't it. That wasn't it. That about 10 minutes later that we broke for lunch. I mean, we tore this guy a brand new. You know what? I mean, when he sat down to go to the bathroom, he didn't know which side of the bowl to sit on. But we go. Yanni and I go walking out. And they were the Tea Party people were loaded for bear, waiting for Occupy, because there were threats for them to come up and protest this group. Well, a total of five of them showed up. There were two women on the beach walking barefoot because they wanted to exercise their feet in the sand. That's why they're protesting out there with that shoes on. That was funny as shit. Oh, I didn't say that, did I? Anyway, when we were walking out, there were these two people holding these signs that simply said green. Green what? And they were trying to sneak in. Well, fortunately, they set it up where you had to have your name listed and you had to wear a badge and so on and so forth. Well, these people couldn't get in, so they disappeared. So as we walk across the street to get into our car, there's a single lone guy there, and he looks like he just fell out of the Occupy Wall Street, scraggly looking. He's got this handmade white pasteboard sign here saying, down with the 1%, I'm with the 99%. And I'm looking at the single lone guy, and Yanni's looking at me like, oh, no, you're not. Oh, no, you're not. I'm looking at him shaking my head and going, oh, yes, I am. So I shout across the street, and I go, hey, dude, how's that working for you? I said, you're the 1%, and I'm pointing to the building, and I go, and we're the 99%. We came back from lunch. He was gone.
Wow.
You know, I'm not going to keep my mouth shut.
I think you ought to go take a trip to Florida there and see what kind of trouble you and Tesla can get in together. Because let me tell you, you guys should have the live remotes. You know, whenever big event, they bring those live, where you see NBC, ABC, oh, man. You and Tesla would turn the sunshine shade up, turn the sunshine state upside down.
I don't think Tesla needs too much of a help there. Oh, man,
no.
But it was very, very, very interesting, very, very interesting.
Yeah. Tesler, do you like anybody in the GOP? You've been kind of quiet. I mean, in most of your shows, I know you let everyone else do a lot of the talking and you kind of moderate, but what's your opinion? We haven't heard much about you on what's going on as far as the GOP candidates.
Well, primarily, I did a show about a week and a half ago, in which Rick Santorum is my man. And, after that, Newt Then after that, of course, is the fellow from Texas, Rick Perry. And then after that, you know, the white guy from up north.
Mitt Romney. Macaroni.
The white guy from up north.
Macaroni? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that guy.
You know, he's from Romney's from. Aren't you? You're originally from New Hampshire, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So he's the Romney was. Well, actually, Romney's dad was governor of my state. Romney's
right,
dad
that's
was.
That's what I'm getting. That's why I call him up because he's from Michigan.
Oh, that's
Isn't
right.
Isn't Romney in Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was originally born in Michigan. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
See,
before I was at a Republican. This was a while back. It was something Republican where they said, joining us up on stage, they said, is George Romney one of the best governors the state's ever had? And I went home and I asked my neighbor, who was kind of one of my political mentors, I said, what kind of governor was Romney? And this guy went on and on. Oh, he was just the worst governor ever. Talking about how, you know, he was very opinionated with his religion at the time. But anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Tesla, but go ahead.
No, that's right. I mean, Romney was a bad governor. And remember, he came from Massachusetts, the same state as Michael Dukakis. So, I mean, he's in a great line of liberals. That's it. Now, the final guy who I have no support for for at all is Ron Paul. You know, I think it was Amy who made a reference to Ron Paul supporters at the convention, at their state convention. Look, Ron Paul is not a Tea Party supporter, period. And for the people who support Ron Paul, you cannot be a Tea Party person at the same time. Impossible.
No, I agree with that. And actually, the women that were founders of that particular Tea Party, I was absolutely shocked and amazed. And I'm like, are you really sure? Do you really completely understand this individual? And
right.
They're telling me, oh, but you know. And I turned around, and one of them said, well, it was only one or two lines that were printed in the publication. He knew nothing about it. And I said, I don't think so. I said, I actually ended up getting copies of those segments, and it was not just one or two lines. It was in several different publications. He's listed as the editor and publisher, which means he has direct involvement in what goes into it. In order to
right.
be an editor, you have to sit down and edit, which means you have to read what is going
exactly.
in front of you and saying, all right, we're going to use this, or no, you're going to trim it.
Right.
I'm kind of curious. Let's go back to
the infiltrator. The guy is an infiltrator. That
okay,
is,
hang
that
on a second.
Okay, no question
Tesla,
about that.
Hang on a second. Hang on. Tesla, coming back to you. You had mentioned you can't be Tea Party and a Ron Paul supporter. Obviously, your socialism is not an option. You're very schooled on it. It's your show. What are a couple of points why can't you be? For people who are listening who don't understand what you're saying, why can't you be?
Well, first of all, in there's two areas. Number one, the fact of the matter is Ron Paul's publications in the past have demonstrated that he is, in fact, a racist, okay? So if you are a racist, you have no business being in the Tea Party.
Exactly.
Because Tea Party people are not racist. Let's get that straight, okay? So if you follow Ron Paul and you support his doctrine, on racism and what he just said in his newsletters, then you can't be it's inconsistent. Now, but the more important fact is the issue of foreign policy. Let's get something straight, ladies and gentlemen. Tea Party folks, as far as I know, support a good, positive message in foreign policy. That foreign policy being, what is it in the best interest? Is it in the best interest of America for us to be there? Not some other country, not some other place. Is it in the American best interest to be in or with another country? And if it is, then be there, support them. If not, then get out. That's the criteria. And that's the criteria that I understand Tea Party people use as well. So it's not one of these Ron Paul, let's get rid of everything, nor is it one of these, we're going to police the whole world. It is one of these situations in which America has to determine if it's best for America to be present, not anything else. That's foreign policy for America, at least the way I see it. Go ahead.
Well, no, that's exactly what I wanted to. I think for a lot of people, they don't understand that. And the bottom line is that, I mean, we have to do what's right for America. I am a constitutionalist, but under the idea that times have changed, other countries now have very dangerous weapons.
Well, the Constitution says to protect from foreign and domestic.
That is correct.
If we have to go and show strength to prevent that foreign from becoming a domestic problem, then that is what we have to do. That doesn't mean sitting behind our borders. And Thomas Jefferson, I believe, got it right. People may argue no, but I think he did.
Well,
and Toddy's in the room, too, now. Let me see. Who else has joined us? Toddy, hello. Toddy, give a call in. We are still waiting for my guest. Something must have happened, because, like I said, she did confirm she would be calling in just earlier today.
For those who've never seen her picture, look it up. I think we know what she's doing.
It's on the front page of this show. But our guest was to have been Pam Geller of Atlas Shrugged, and I will get a hold of her after the show and get her to come back. I do apologize. I have no message saying if there was a difficulty. She did verify the phone number, so I know she has our contact, and she did say yes, she will be here.
No, we'll do our show. You know, if she calls in, great. Another question going back constitutionally, Tesla, you did a show several months ago regarding all these czars that are being appointed. Are they illegal or by constitution? Because I don't know the constitution that well. I mean, but are czars illegal?
Of course they're illegal, and here's why. It's a very simple concept. Look, there's a phrase in the constitution that says, okay, that these appointments can be made with the advice and consent of the Senate. What's so difficult about that? What's so hard to understand? Okay, you want to call somebody a czar? Great, call them what you want. Appoint them all you want. But it has to be done with the consent of the Senate. And I don't care if you're going to approve. Well, I do care, but technically, all these czars, if they are approved, even if they're communist, you know, which they would be under Obama, you know, they were approved constitutionally. So, but these czars have not been.
All right. Before you go further, Mike, we do have another person holding on, and let me get McGillicuddy in there. What is your real name? Oh, wait, I have to turn on a mic, Ann.
Oh, wait, I got my mic on?
There we go, McGillicuddy.
That's Toddy.
Hi, Toddy.
Yeah, that's my Skype. I was just looking at the Constitution since he brought up the thing about the vacancies, and I believe it's in that Article 2 section where it's of the Constitution that they say that the Senate has to have advice and consent, just like the treaties. You know, because here's the thing: so the president can do this, then he can also do treaties without the Senate. That's why we have to stand on this and say you can't appoint people and claim a recess. You don't get to decide when the Senate's in session. The Senate gets to decide that, and the members of the Senate get to decide that. You don't. And because of that, it's wrong. I mean, and watch him do it with a treaty. Soon he's going to make a treaty with somebody, and it's not going to go through the Senate. It's going to be a recess treaty.
Now that it does have to be. Mike, you out there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm getting schooled. I'm getting schooled by everybody. But, yeah, I'm out here. I just – the reason I had asked that is because we are talking basically about the Constitution, and Ron Paul is known, quote-unquote, as the constitutional type candidate.
Look with that.
However, he has never said anything against these czars. I mean
– The guy signed on with 60 Democrats to support the super committee. Did you know that?
I don't even know what the super committee is.
The super committee is where they took and they had like six senators and six congressmen get together, so there were 12 people, and it was like a super congress is what they called it, a super committee. And basically, it was like a mini Politburo. One person represented 25 million Americans. And what they were supposed to do is patch out this budget issue that we were having. Okay? Now, Ron Paul signs onto a letter in support of that with from Simpson. I believe I have a link to it. I'll put it in the chat room. And he's like the 62nd signature on it. One of 40 Republicans to join 60 Democrats in favor of an unconstitutional committee created just, you know, this has nothing to do with our Constitution. It has nothing to do with our country. It's like the Constitution doesn't exist. I couldn't believe all these people are behind Ron Paul, and here's the guy that actually supported something that he should know if he's supposed to know the Constitution, that he is completely unconstitutional. There was no basis for this. It gets me going that there's just so much of this in Washington. We had a group of founders who founded a nation on the basis of the fact that we would have honor, that honor would come out of the office, because you had people that were going to serve and would step down from being the masters to be the privileged servant to serve freedom. That was the idea. And our entire group just forgot what freedom's about, just forgot the reason they're supposed to have honor in office. It's gone.
Okay, what's going on here, guys?
I have no idea.
Where did everyone go?
I have no idea.
I'm right here. I'm listening. I'm not sure. We're listening. Is that
somehow I pulled a Kreskin on them and I made them all mute at the same time. It's just one of those things.
No, I was listening, but you know, once again, it clearly indicates how we as Americans. I mean, this is ridiculous. We just kind of sit on our ass and do nothing and complain. I mean, clearly, as you saw this weekend.
You mean like leaving dead air on me?
Well, I mean, you obviously go to rallies and you're very active in your county. We need more people not only to be active, but, you know, they need to raise hell. They need to rebel back. Because, I mean, these are the type of things that when unless we don't do it, more and more of our rights are going to be taken away. The lady who was going to be our guest got an award of courage because she stood up. And more of us just need to do that, because if we don't, I don't know what guest it was, Annie, you have, but I think he's a retired judge, and he made a comment. I think this election is the be-all and end-all.
That's Mary
Stewart.
I think
in a lot of ways it's probably accurate. If we do four more years of where we're going, turning the clock back may almost be irreparable. To whereas, I mean, even on the Republican side, it's almost as if it's almost more of a slower death. It's like,
go ahead.
I think at this point the Tea Party is helping to turn it around, but it's going to be a long, hard fight. And the problem being is that conservatives, by nature, are willing to go with the flow up to a point. And I think that is why the Declaration of Independence says that the people are willing to suffer, but when a long train of abuse, you know, I think they chose those words carefully because they were the original American conservatives. They stood back, and took it. And you got to understand, they took it for like 75 years, and finally it was push come to shove. And you're doing things long distance over a long period of time. Things are happening faster now with the new electronic ages and stuff, and now we're being propelled into the fight. And it's a whole different type of fight. But conservatives, by nature, are willing to sit back and say, all right, you know, we're going to trust the system to work. We always trust the system to work. Now we're finding the system is so broken, it cannot work. Now we have to be the mechanics and help rebuild it, put those patches in, put those repairs in. And we don't want to tear it down at this point. We want to fix it.
Here's the problem, though, I think, ladies and gentlemen. The problem is, and part of this is what we talked about a little earlier about with Ron Paul. If you really think there are no enemies of America in America, then you're stupid. Okay, some of these enemies are many of these enemies are Ron Paul supporters, believe it or not. You can say, well, how about a Ron Paul? Listen to me, ladies and gentlemen. There are a lot of people out there in this country who would love to tear down this country, and they're doing it by choosing Ron supporters, and they're either doing it intentionally or they're stupid and they don't understand what this country is all about. Another example of this kind of infiltration is the Catholic Church. Again, that's been in infiltrated by very evil people as well. And if you don't believe that, I got plenty of links for you to prove that point. What I'm getting across is this issue of insidious evil is throughout our country and throughout our religious institutions today. This is not just, you know, beating the Tea Party is good, but my God, we have to have a litmus test today of who is really a constitutionalist, who is really an American, and who really is in favor of religion. I mean, that's what we're looking at these days.
Well, this is something I found very interesting, because the majority of people I met in the Tea Party convention were people such as myself, staunch conservatives. And that's why hearing them supporting Ron Paul means to me they didn't do their full due diligence just yet. They have not done it. But we had one person sitting in the audience when they were saying, what do you want to see in the winning primary candidate? And everyone else was saying good, strong conservative policies. We want to see them stick by their values. And one woman goes, I want to see the best person to beat Obama. Excuse me, that's not the – hello? You don't compromise. There's no compromise. There is no surrender. And that's what the Tea Party has to remember. No compromise, no surrender. Stick by those values. Push those buttons. And you know what? We're going to make them change. Now, I got told by someone locally, and they said to me, you know, you want to make policy change in the South Carolina legislature. This is how you do it. You get 50 people to write to their representative. All you need is 50 people to write to your representative, a senator or representative, just 50. Get each one of the Tea Parties in that jurisdiction to pick 50 people to write those letters, and they will change their vote. Do you know how simple that is?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you've got to get 50 people, and sadly in this world it's harder to get two people.
No, actually, we did this last week. Here in South Carolina, we did this. The I-95 corridor legislation went through the legislature and the Senate, passed. It went to Governor Haley's desk. She vetoed it. It then went back to the House, and last week, last Tuesday, we were voting to override her veto. We got behind. We went over there. We went, and we got those people. And we changed their votes. They voted to sustain her veto. So the federal I-95 corridor legislation will not apply in the state of South Carolina. It works.
Oh, wow. Go ahead.
It works. We did this last Tuesday.
You probably sent your hit squad in there to slap her around, Annie.
I set up my computer. I popped off email message blasts. I updated websites. I sent out information. And then people started calling people, and I now actually had someone volunteer to help me maintain the newsletter and the website. You know, you reach out, and people were willing, and they say, all right, if you're willing to stand up, I'll stand with you. And that's what you have to find, someone to help you stand. The more you stand together, the stronger you are. You know,
oh,
I got to mention Dr. Jones is in the house.
Oh, and Dr. Jones should call in. You know, Tesla had said something that's kind of interesting. Both of us being strong supporters of the Catholic Church all of our life, I noticed at a very, very young age that they were tied in, not just in covering up certain things that were happening, but I noticed that they were taking very liberal political stances, and their influence, whether it's their television stations or radio stations, are very, I don't know if this is the right word to use, I'm not a historian, but Nazi-like. I mean, it's very manipulative. They had Newt on recently, and just the way they it's almost like each show is somewhat of a staged play or something along made for TV type thing. And I've noticed that as much as you know,
I think it's also
committed.
I think they're also trying to be a little more hip. I think they're trying to be a little more hip. But you got to remember, this is the very same. And you got to remember, I'm raised Roman Catholic, and I'm not sure if I'm going to remain Roman Catholic. Honestly, I am honestly thinking about that. But this is the very same Catholic Church that, when Ted Kennedy voted for abortion legislation, still gave him communion, and they did the same to Nancy Pelosi, and she's Roman Catholic. So now, according to the Catholic Church, you're supposed to be excommunicated for, you know, supporting abortion and promoting it and doing things to cause abortion to happen. But they're still there. Well, actually, no. Ted Kennedy was buried in consecrated ground. He should not have been.
Well, you guys, I don't know if you guys know this, but the first bank to loan money, I believe, was by Pope Innocent II. And then the if you look at any blueprints of a church, you'll find casinos were in them back in the Dark Ages. And you'll also find, if you're willing to go to the Catholic encyclopedia, the Illuminati is explained. So those are three specific things about the Catholic Church that I've just ran across researching. I mean, I'm not trying to say one way or the other. It's just, just little, you know, Trivial Pursuit stuff, I guess you could say. So just figured I'd mention that if you're actually looking at the Catholic Church in different ways
regardless
it affected
of religion,
society completely.
Yeah, regardless of the religion that's involved in here, leaving my biases aside, being a strong Roman Catholic, I think they're unavoidable. If you want to deny them, and they are the biggest real estate holder on the globe. On this planet Earth, the Catholic Church holds more real estate than any other business or church or what
have you. Do you know why they had done that originally, why they ended up with all the Crusades and taking land and buying land and doing all of that? Because in the feudal times, that was the statement of power. And most of the when you take the bishops in the Catholic Church or in the church in general as a whole, they were originally mostly noble class. They were mostly nobles. And this was their way of trying to balance power with the crown and to eventually become king if they got the chance. And that was the big reason behind all of that since way back.
Nothing's wrong with presenting facts, my friend. Nothing, like it or not like it, facts, you present facts and people can play stupid or people can acknowledge it.
You can pick out any religion and you're going to find corruption in it, and which is one of the reasons why I wish Pam Geller had called in, and I apologize for not having her here. Something must have occurred. Again, Pam Geller was supposed to be our guest today. She did confirm just late last night she was going to be on here. She did confirm that she's got the number and everything. So I do not know what happened. Something important must have happened. Maybe this situation with Iran recently and Obama deciding to cancel the maneuvers with Israel. It's possible she may have gotten coerced by Fox or something. You know, I'm just a little pea in the pod here. Listen, we got a caller here from Area 212. Let me bring this person
in. That might
be her.
That's New York.
Okay, let me bring this person in the line if I can get the microphone to work. Area code 212, you're on the air live.
Yeah, Pamela Geller. I mixed up my times. I'm really, really sorry. I know how hard it is. The Blog Talk Radio folks, to get everybody together. Forgive me. You could talk bad about me behind my back.
Well, 1,000 lashes with a wet noodle.
There you go.
Pamela, this is co-host Cool Mike. Not, you know, the only forgiveness we're going to have to do if I end up in New York, I guess I'm just going to have to be seen on the town with you. That's the only way you're going to make things up right with me.
Oh, you did not.
It sounds like a plan there, Cool Mike. Are you really cool, or are you just pretending to be cool?
Well, you go to my Facebook, and I'll let you decide there, Princess. Here,
just make sure you join us.
First of all, just glad you could join us. Congratulations, reading your bios on you've received a lot of awards and accolades. How do you address the critics that basically come at you and basically try to claim you're not a dedicated American or you really don't, by your political views, you're not committed to the Constitution, blah, blah, blah? How do you address that?
Well, this is the war that we're in. This is the war in the information battle space. This is the war of ideas. And the ridicule, smear, defaming, and libel of the preservers and defenders of freedom are essential. It's an essential part of their warfare, because if you marginalize and you render radioactive anyone fighting the good fight, then you've lost the war. And this is a huge problem because the media, or as I like to refer to them, the enemedia, is the most powerful weapon that our enemies have in their arsenal. And we have seen, forget me for a moment, we have seen them literally take apart and destroy our most effective leaders on the right, whether it's Sarah Palin, the destruction of Herman Cain. They just pick them off. They descend on a person like maggots on dead flesh. And they are relentless. And I think that a big mistake that we have made on the right is we let them do this. We never see this on the left. And you could say, well, they don't attack them on the left. But when the left is being attacked, they literally go into a huddle around that person, no matter how egregious the offense, whether it's a Chappaquiddick, whether it's John Edwards, whether it's Monica Lewinsky's dress, it doesn't matter. We, on the other hand, on the right, as soon as something bad is said about someone, everybody runs, and they can't run fast enough. And this is quite terrible, and this is a weakness that I think is a fatal weakness. I think the left is quite aware of it because they exploit our goodness. They exploit our righteousness. They exploit the fact that we don't want flaws, and we don't want people that are quote-unquote defective. Well, let me say this. I don't know if you could get a person more closer to perfect than a Sarah Palin. I mean, seriously, the woman is married, loves her husband, married a million years, has 5 children, believes in life, and so she has a child is having a child with severe challenges, and yet, still has a child. She walks the walk. She talks the talk. Her resume is impeccable. She achieved it all the hard way. She's not part of any dynasty. She came up through the ranks. She was a PTA mom. She went from bake sales to the mayor's office to the... I mean, you can't get anybody more righteous. And yet we were told she was unelectable. By whom? By whom? By the forces of darkness? Seriously. So these attacks on me are just, this is the MO. This is the textbook left-wing/Islamic supremacist warfare in the information battle space. And it's really why I wrote my last book, the Stop Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to the Resistance, because I don't think people understand the war that we're in, the battle that we're fighting, because they are misinformed, because the media is misinforming them, disinformation, and it's the reason why what you're doing, and why I was very upset that I was late, what you're doing is so critical. Because the key is in information dissemination, and the only ones that are doing a legit job of it are folks like you and the blogs and new media. And of course the media is going to ignore, ridicule, attempt to destroy that which is theirs. If you think they're going to give up the power, and it is a power, their influence is mighty powerful. One only has to look at the election of Barack Hussein Obama to see how incredibly powerful still they are. My first book, The Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration's War on America, was to alert the American people as to what they were electing into the White House. That book was written really largely before even the election, so all the information was out there that the media chose to ignore, that a man with his, I can't even call it a thin resume, because it implies a resume of some sort, that a man with that sketchy a background and that nefarious connections to Khalid and, of course, Wright and Frank Marshall Davis and Odinga in Kenya and so on and so forth could be elected to the most powerful seat in the free world is a testimonial to the power that the media still has. And this is the essence of the war. And this is why I salute you and what you are doing. You may not think that you're big enough. There's no such thing. First of all, peanuts make a bag full. None of us are big enough. None of us. But together, we are a force, which is why we have to support each other and why we have to continue to do what we do for very little money, if any. That's another thing. They attempt to starve us. they're always doing things on the Koch brothers. Well, I don't know one person that gets a dime from Koch. I don't know anybody that gets funded by anybody. So they're starving us. Meanwhile, they are literally, I mean, the Center for American Progress and Media Matters, these are Soros think tanks. There's enormous amount of liberal dollars. These liberals have been made rich by the paradigm in the government of whatever, you know, if it's the greening, you know, that political fraud of global warming and all that nonsense. These are whole industries set up based on a hoax, based on, you know, a political fraud. So we are, you know, David and Goliath. But so what? David won.
Well, this is true, and I really appreciate all your compliments. It was something I had mentioned earlier. I said, you know, we have to stand together because, you know, one person has just so much strength. But as we gather together, you gather the strength, and it's harder to knock us down. But you also mentioned something like this, like the blog and the blog talk. I had a conversation when I was at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention yesterday. They've got a new media network coming up for just conservatives, only conservatives, so we can narrow our focus. And I had said this about a year and a half ago when I first joined Blog Talk. This is the new medium. This is the new mass media. We will, in the end, knock out cable TV and the newspapers. And I think if we can still maintain our power, our focus here, I think we can then knock out the liberal media, the fourth estate, they call it. And I think that's where we stand. Point in case is what they're doing to these Marines that urinated on the corpses. I mean, underneath military law, this would be a minor offense, a slap on the wrist. But what are they doing to them?
Listen, the victory tinkle is largely an overheated smear campaign. And I'm more concerned with the timing of it. I'm more concerned with who leaked it, because we know that it was taken in the spring and the summer last year, latest maybe summer. Our boys and girls are coming home. Is this what, I mean, what's the objective? That they're tarnished and they're returned to a Vietnam welcome? What is the objective? I asked you. I'm deeply troubled by this. Clearly, look, you want to give them a reprimand? Fine. You know, but this idea that they may go to jail or the court martial, this is outrageous. When you consider what is done to our boys and girls, or you consider what the Taliban, the gassing of girls' schools, the clitorectomies, the slaughters, the honor killings. I mean, America, because of the media, really has no idea as to the bloodthirsty nature of these savages on a daily basis, as in the air that they breathe. And the very idea that tinkling on a jihadist, dead jihadist, after a firefight, you know, again, you're not there. War is hell. Was it a bad choice? Yeah. Are we going to get all ourselves all tied up in knots about it? No way. America doesn't care. Of course, the media is trying to drum this thing up. It was interesting. I was on Sun TV. I was at CNN, and Sun TV broadcast from there. And over on the next sort of like booth-ish, I don't know how else you would describe it, where pundit, I couldn't see his face. He sounded like the guy from Time Magazine, but I can't say for sure. He's on CNN, and he said, you know, these Marines, it's not the Marines, Petraeus should be prosecuted. And I'm thinking to myself, we are literally in the lands of the enemy. Seriously. That's what we're talking about. We are at war with people that want to destroy the United States. And the sooner that people realize that there is a civil war going on, there is. I mean, all the, you know, bombs and bloodshed and bullets come as a result of what happens in this war, the information war. But there's just no way you're going to reconcile the left and the right now. There's just no way. Because it's a battle fundamentally for America.
This is true, and that was one of the things Senator DeMint had mentioned when he was speaking, that no, the line is now drawn in the sand. There is no more compromise. You're going to have to come over to our side of the aisle now. And one of the things I noticed, too, is that no one is actually realizing what Islam truly is. They're still going by the old American type of standards, like there's a black and a white answer to everything. No, there's not. Islam is completely gray. There's no black and white areas.
Look, frankly, I don't care what you worship. You know, I don't care if you worship a stone. Just don't stone me with it. My problem is not with the religious aspect. Like I said, I don't care if you're a Wiccan. I don't care if you're a pagan. I don't care if you love your pet rock, okay? My problem is with the political aspect of it, the imperialistic side of it, the supremacism. You know, under Islamic law, under the Sharia, this is an authoritative political code that is not just for Muslims, but non-Muslims. It is a legal system that subjugates, persecutes, and oppresses non-Muslims. Now, Jewish law is applicable only to Jews, and canon law, again, is not non-Christians, not Catholics. But the Sharia is a different egg entirely. And we are seeing encroaching Sharia. We are seeing the masking of the workplace where, you know, Muslim prayer times are being imposed on union contracts. And we are seeing the masking of public schools where prayer spaces are set aside for Muslim children. Not for Christians, not for Jews, not for Hindus, but for Muslim children. And every single time somebody says no, like the teacher who wanted to go, the new teacher who wanted to take a month off to go on Hajj, a once-in-a-lifetime trip to, Mecca. Now, you can make that trip at any time. It's a once-in-a-lifetime trip. So the school said, no, you can't because you are our only math lab teacher, and we can't lose you for a month. So she quit. And the Justice Department, Obama's Justice Department, sued and won. And the school had to fork over $75,000 in legal fees as well. This is something the Justice Department is doing on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, I have a story coming out. You'll be the first one to hear. Ooh. Under a Freedom of Information Act request, which I submitted over a year ago for documents between the Department of Justice and Muslim Brotherhood groups like CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, and ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, the collusion is breathtaking. And this story should be coming out, I think, in WorldNet Daily tomorrow. I actually posted some of the documents. There are over 14,000.
Whoa.
You know, when I first, and it was a narrow request. When I first made my request, and they said, oh, we can't do this. It's 14,000. That in itself was news to me. There's 14,000 documents between you and CARE and ISNA? Really? That in itself is a big story. Why so many documents? There's nothing like that on anything else. I know I've spoken to people at DOJ. So there's a lot going on under the radar that people are not aware of. Again, this is the media. This is the media obfuscating and deceiving. Look what they've done with the coverage of Obama. I mean, it's really kind of incredible. And I think that the American people largely do not want to be involved in – they're not political wonks. They don't want to be involved in policy. They want to be free to live their lives. They don't want government in their lives. They don't want to have to think about it. But increasingly, they're being forced to think about it because increasingly government is getting bigger and your privacy is being violated and invaded on a daily basis. And the chickens haven't even come home to roost. That, you know, whatever it is now, is it $50,000, $60,000 in debt on every American's head, when in fact it's really more because every American is not paying taxes, only half are. So it's really $100,000 and climbing of debt that's owed by every tax-paying American. It's absolutely incredible. And you never hear about that. I don't know why the Republicans cannot speak plainly these problems, because these problems are as plain as day and as simple as ABC. And I do worry about Romney getting the nod. Of course I'm going to support him. There's no question about it. Do I want him? I don't. I don't, because he's not vicious enough and he's not ruthless enough for the street fight that we're going to be engaged in after our nominee is named. Of course he's staying out of it because, you know, like Napoleon said, you know, when your enemy is making a mistake, you know, don't get in their way. Right now we're a circular firing squad. You know, we're doing his work for him. But that's part of the vetting process, and it's fine. And you're really honing the skills of these nominees. I mean, last night's debate was, in my opinion, the best. It was the most interesting. It was, you know, people were forced to define themselves. It was a very, very good debate. And with the exception of Ron Paul, I'd take any of them. I really would. Ron Paul, I think, is a very damaging and divisive and frightening part of this, I don't know, morphing in the Republican Party. It's kind of scary. It shows a dearth of understanding of foreign policy. I think he's a dangerous guy. It bothers me that he gets – not only, you know, the number two spot and all the Twitterers and this and that, but if you know anything about his followers, they're maniacal. And I know Sarah says, don't diss the followers. Listen, I've seen them up close and personal at CPAC for the past 3 years. These people are bots. They're like Obama bots. But
they are. They are. Because I was at the South Carolina Tea Party convention over the weekend, and then I ended up with tickets to the convention. And I don't know why. They always sit me behind a huge, gigantic guy, and I'm tiny, and I can never see the stage. But I was listening to what Ron Paul's response was to the Iran question in foreign policy, and I had a young girl sitting next to me, 19 years old, and another young girl in front of me. She's a sophomore in high school, and they were both poli-sci majors. They both wanted to get into politics. When Ron Paul came out with his response, I'm sitting there with a WTF look on my face. What the heck is he saying? I couldn't understand a single word. And I turned around to both girls and I said, do you understand what he's saying? And they said, not one word. He was doing such a doublespeak, and my head was spinning. I thought it was going to explode. And then at the Tea Party convention, I'm talking to a bunch of my friends that are staunch conservatives, and they're saying, well, since we couldn't get Michelle Bachmann, we're coming behind Ron Paul. I'm going, what? I stood there literally with my mouth open. And then my state senator...
Well, because his fiscal message is very attractive. There's just no question about it. The fiscal responsibility, I mean, zero tax rate is a ridiculous premise. I would love it. Don't misunderstand me, and I get it. But the point is what good is your wallet if you ain't got your head? And what good is anything if you ain't got your freedom? And that really is the number one thing. This has nothing to do with, you want to bomb Iran for Israel. No. Israel is perceived anyway as a proxy for the United States in the Middle East. I mean, so it's always been about the United States. It's always been about the United States. Israel's problem is that she's aligned with the United States in a region that despises the United States. Israel's not the big boy on the block. They've said it a million times. Israel's the little Satan. America's the big Satan. It's never been. Israel is just the appetizer. Once you remove Israel from the global paradigm, you will unleash an evil that is almost unfathomable. Because I don't think people even begin to appreciate how much jihad Israel, you know, is sort of like thwarting for us.
Well,
they're sort of like that dam, you know, the dam in the Middle East. Without Israel, talk about jihad unleashed.
Well, I got a question for you then. Did Obama just now hand them to Iran on a silver platter when he stopped the joint military-naval thing this weekend?
Exercises. Well, let me say this. I'm not sure what happened there yet. There is a body of thinking that says that Netanyahu might have postponed it because he feared that Obama, might leak those exercises. And that's not an altogether unreasonable fear. We have seen time and time again where Obama and his minions have leaked critical information. Even, you know, no one ever further investigated the slaughter of those SEALs after OBL was taken out. Now, their information had to come from very high up. We see this time and time again. And so if I was Israel, I would be reticent too. I would be. I don't know this to be a fact, but I am not commenting on it supremely yet because I don't have the information. But either way, it stinks. If it was Obama or if it was Israel's fear of Obama, I think it's very telling as to the state of affairs, the low state of affairs in the free world. We have a vacuum. Actually, I think the most courageous and bold leader has been Stephen Harper in Canada. He's been remarkable. Actually, I say remarkable, but really his position is very American in the pursuit and defense of freedom. And, Obama's abandonment of our allies, and not just Israel, but clearly Eastern Europe when it came to missile defense and the Honduras. And I mean, he every time sides with our enemies, every time. And so, and this is what was in my book, his relinquishing of American sovereignty and abandoning our allies. He has changed the global landscape for decades, scores of years to come. The fact that under his the auspices of Obama, you know, the era of Obama, you have a tsunami of Islamic imperialism in what were once secular nations. Now, maybe those leaders like Mubarak, now I happen to have liked Mubarak, still do. He was the first Muslim leader to sign a peace accord with Israel. He was an ally of ours for 30 years that Obama would toss him to the curb without even so much as breaking a sweat. It's just breathtaking. And they've always wanted Egypt. That's why the Muslim Brotherhood was banned. The Muslim Brotherhood was banned in Egypt, and we knew this was coming because Obama invited them to his speech in Cairo after Mubarak had banned them for years. And there's a reason why Karadawi was banned. This is a very evil and violent and devout, you know, pure Islam. Authentic Islam. You know, they want the coming of the universal caliphate. They want the world living under one Islamic state. They want a world living under the caliphate. So this is very dangerous to me. And then you would see it with, Tunisia, which was one of the most moderate Muslim countries. They just elected a Sharia government. Libya, I don't know what we were doing there. We don't even get our oil from there. I mean, Europe does. Let them fight that battle. But what we were doing there to oust Gaddafi, who, by the way, I'm not going to shill for Gaddafi here. He's by no means any hero. There are no heroes in this story. None. But you're getting now a jihadist government with al-Qaeda elements in the Libyan government. This is a wave. This is a tsunami of Islamic supremacist governments that all go by the same book, that all read the same religious doctrine, that all adhere to the jihadi threat. So, you know, under Bush, you had revolutions of true freedom. You had the Rose Revolution. You had the Cedar Revolution. And under Obama, you have Islamic revolutions. And if you think that this is not going to affect us, then, you're in for a real rude awakening. And these things don't happen. You know, nothing happens for decades, and then decades happen in a day, like a 9/11 type of a thing. It was shocking. Not really. When you go back, you see in 93 and in Cobalt Towers and the coal, you know, it was natural. And then, of course, you know, OBL issued a fatwa in 98. He warned us. We're at war with you. We're coming for you. He told us. Now, did the media tell you about that fatwa really in any meaningful way? No. To this day, I mean, last week there were 3 jihadist attacks in this country. 3. That were foiled. That were foiled.
No, what I find amazing.
Is the media talking about it at all?
No, what I find amazing, we were calling out in 93 saying this is not an isolated incident because I actually had been on duty on that day when the Twin Towers were hit. I was working in the 90 precinct. And I remember listening to the radios as the calls were going out. Our guys were going straight over the bridge, the ESU and the other guys that were off on their lunch breaks were just running across the bridge to help with that. That was the day. And my sister-in-law was in the towers.
Oh, my God. Look, yeah. The only difference between 93 and 2001 is that 2001 succeeded from
exactly.
An engineering point of view as opposed to taking the towers down from the bottom, which was the original idea. You know, if you take out the bottom, it's going to fall down. Right? That
right.
was the thinking. But they didn't understand the architectural structure of the World Trade Center, and I don't know that they knew that it was going to come down the way it came down. They did hope to create as much pain and suffering and death as possible because, look, they fell the way they fell because of the columns. But, you know, there was no way of knowing that it wouldn't have fallen to the right or it wouldn't have fallen to the left, taking out literally lower Manhattan, the tip of Manhattan. They had hoped, you know, the World Trade Center has its own zip code.
Exactly.
Those buildings had its own zip code. They were hoping for anywhere between 50 to 75 to 100,000 people.
Yeah.
So when people say get over it, I look at them and I see someone that is either clueless or complicit. In either case, they're the enemy.
Exactly. And what they didn't realize is that a lot of our emergency services moved their headquarters over there. Our police headquarters were there. The mayor's department moved in there. The FBI was in there. The Secret Service was in there. And so many of our essential services were headquartered there. And I think they were hoping, I know they were hoping, to take out all of our essential services and cripple Manhattan. And in a way, they succeeded to do for a while.
I mean, look, the country shut down for a while. You know, we were, you know, Bush said, you know, shop. Everyone makes fun of that today. But what Bush was saying was, we got to keep going. You know, we got to keep moving. We got to keep going. We got to keep, you know, money, blood in the lifeline of this country. I understand what his strategy was at the time. I do think it was harmful to say it's a religion of peace. And, you know, the two symbols of Islam, if you see paintings or if you see renderings of Muhammad, he's always although that's, you're not allowed to do that. You know, you're not allowed to paint, depict Muhammad. But when you do in the past, he's carrying a sword in one hand and the Quran in the other. These are the two symbols of Islam, the sword. So this religion of peace nonsense is, again, it's a fictitious construct of the West.
Oh, that it is. That it is. Now, having been at the Tea Party convention, I got a little bit of a possible inside scoop for you. I'm hearing rumors that it's possible Ron Paul may back out just at the convention or just prior to the convention and throw his weight behind Romney.
Really?
I heard
I
that.
I find that very difficult to believe. Why he wants a spotlight at the convention. I've heard that he wants.
He
wants to stand in the game. Well, look, he also, I don't think he'll go for a third-party run because he does care about his son.
Exactly.
And
that's
what
I heard also.
Right,
he wants to protect his son.
Right. If he delivers the presidency to Obama by splitting the Republican Party, his son, you know, the sins of the father, that family would not be forgiven. I mean, it would be a stain.
His career would be cut right there. Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't necessarily see that happening. I don't see him pulling out. He you know, listen, nobody's talking about the elephant in the room, which is that he's always number two. That's a big deal. If that had been Newt or that had been Santorum, I mean, everybody would be talking about it. It's like nobody wants to talk about it because it's very worrisome. And, you know, you have Bill O'Reilly. Well, he'll never get the nomination. Just because Bill O'Reilly says it doesn't mean it's not so. Everybody is concerned with his support. Everybody.
Well, supposedly he's doing this so he can get his fiscal policies implemented. And they may exchange it, saying, all right, we'll follow your fiscal policies if you give us your delegates.
Look, we'll have to see. I mean, we'll have to see. I wish he would trade it off with Santorum or even Gingrich, you know, because I think they have a much better understanding of the enemy. You know, when Romney says stuff like jihad has nothing to do with Islam, I find it very worrying.
Mm.
I mean, how can anyone have such a fundamental misunderstanding of the enemy that is vowed to destroy us deeply? You know, Obama is Islamophiliac. You know, he is definitely pro-jihad to some extent. I mean, my opinion, of course, to a large extent, and I don't say this to be controversial, you know, by their fruits ye shall know them. And so we know him. And, you know, you are defined by your actions, and his actions are very, you know, the dismantling of NASA, shutting the space program, shutting the Challenger, and telling NASA to redirect their efforts to extol the work of the Muslim world. What the hell was that?
That I couldn't figure out either, and no one made anything about it. And I kept on saying, why isn't anyone talking about that? He's also got this new thing with this recess supposed appointment, Corduroy, and it's, I found out that it's funded solely through the Fed, so Congress has no way to touch it.
Yeah, well, he does a lot of that. He does a lot of that. Look, we need a president, frankly, that's just going to dismantle what this man did. I just think that that's got to be the MBO. We got to dismantle Obamacare. We got to dismantle his foreign policy. We got to dismantle his czars. Seriously, that's what I don't know what this country would even look like in 2016 if he gets in again. I honestly think we got to like run for the hills a little bit. Honestly, I don't know, but really we're talking irrecognizable.
Well, I find one thing, and I mentioned this once before. Everyone's saying, all right, fine, we make sure he doesn't get a second consecutive term. And I said, what happens then? 4 years down the road, something happens and he tries to run again. Or, God forbid, because Michelle Obama supposedly has already filed for his seat in 2016 as a senator.
Look, we can only do one thing at a time.
But I said, if we don't discredit him, and that you have to do by opening his records that he sealed through executive orders, you've got to open his records and publicly disgrace him. If necessary, put him behind bars, because he will be eligible any time later for a second term, or Michelle can step in and take his spot.
Listen, they're talking about putting Michelle in the VP spot. I mean, putting Hillary in the VP spot. She has a 65% approval rating, and she's the worst.
Yep.
And Hillary is the worst. So, look, this is the battle. The battle is an ideological battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the less informed people are, the more inclined they are to make bad decisions. We have an education system that indoctrinates our youth, teaches them garbage, teaches them, you know, they've stopped, you know, cursive. Cursive is no longer being taught. But the political fraud, global warming is being taught. Diversity and pluralism and nonsense and gobbledygook is being taught. So what do you expect? Garbage in, garbage out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, there was a couple in New Hampshire that sued and had legislation put in where that the parents do not approve of the curriculum. They can go in with the school district, have the curriculum done in such a manner that they approve of, or they can yank their kids. Have you heard about that one?
Listen, I love it. I'm a huge supporter of homeschooling. You know, I encourage my readers, if they can get involved, to go to those conventions, if they can help, if you can, because it's a big job, and you got to be able to do it. But if you see the homeschool kids are brighter, they test better, they know more, they have a moral center, and the public school children are being raised in a morally inverted world. You know, they're being taught lies. You know, the civil rights agenda was a Republican agenda and was only co-opted by the Dems, the Democrats, after they saw how they could, exploit and steal. But it's really true. I mean, if you see that picture, there was a picture of MLK and Nixon meeting in 57 to try to come up with a strategy to convince the Democrats to come aboard the Republican civil rights agenda. You know, this is not taught. MLK's support of Israel, he was an unequivocal Zionist, is not taught. Lincoln was the first Republican president. This is not taught. So the problem is that the children are not being taught. What they're being fed is propaganda, left-wing propaganda. And they do have the culture in a chokehold. You cannot watch a television show. You cannot watch a music video. You cannot watch or read a magazine, Time, People, Reader's Digest even, without there a message, the subliminal message. You know, Daisy Kahn, the Ground Zero Musketeer wife, you know, being lauded in Reader's Digest. And, you know, why don't they talk about how she shrugs when it comes to, and this is in an article in More magazine, when it comes to clitorectomies, female genital mutilation, and I mean they don't. This is all again obfuscated and whitewashed, scrubbed, and
no,
this
find,
is the problem.
I find amazing. I remember growing up, Reader's Digest was the most conservative magazine you could possibly get.
Yeah.
When did it start now catering to Daisy Kahn?
Well,
something happened in the last couple
of
decades.
When did any of them? You see, even the fashion magazines, when they do these layouts on, you know, these burqa fashions, and you know, the like one woman I was reading, I can't even read them anymore because every single time I pick one up, there's something. I mean, every single time, this one woman, who's in the fashion biz, and she married a Muslim fellow, and they went to his country, and all the women never left the house. And they're all in these dark, you know, these, you know, clothes, these heavy clothes. And she was saying, you know, it's a very warm, literally and figuratively, very warm feeling. And there's no pressure to leave the house. So don't leave the house. So go stay in your house in a cloth prison and stay there and don't move. I mean, but to write this glowingly, and I think this was in Vogue. I actually did a post on it because it infuriated me so. But this is the crap that they're feeding to young girls.
Shades of Agenda 21.
It's just, it's very, very disturbing. They own the culture. They own the culture, and I don't know if we're because we are businessmen and doctors and so on and so forth that we're not interested in it, or They've been silenced. I mean, look, you know that the there's a group of conservatives in Hollywood, like Sinise and Bruce Willis, and you know they don't get work. They don't get work, and you know if you don't come out as a liberal, you know you're not part of the in crowd, and it's very damaging. And I guess people have to pay their rent. What are you going to do? You got to pay the electric bill.
Yeah.
I got a couple questions as we wind down the show. How can people get a hold of you and you know some of your websites or whatever? And how long before we see your name and underneath it for Congress?
Oh, let me say a couple things. First of all, I'm not running for anything because I don't ever want to couch my message or have to be Sharia compliant, meaning the blasphemy laws. Do not criticize Islam. Do not offend Islam. I think I could do more good outside. If I thought I could do more good inside, and I thought running would be more effective, I would. But I think politics is the rearview mirror. And that's why you see so few politicians willing to take a risk, because they're looking back. They're not looking forward. They put their finger in the wind. Okay, which way is it going? That's the way they're going to go. That ain't me. Can't do it. So I don't see that. As far as reaching me, first of all, you could read me every day. I update my blog at least 10 to 15 times a day with news stories and articles. You can go to atlasshrugs.com or pamelageller.com. I write every week a commentary, weekly commentary column at WorldNet Daily. It's called Defending the West, and I have articles, of course, that run in American Thinker and Big Government. I write for Breitbart. I'm doing an event at CPAC called Islamic Law in America. J. Christian Adams, the senior lawyer at the Department of Justice, who was the whistleblower on the Black Panthers, he will be speaking. Ilario Pantano, the great war hero running for Congress in North Carolina, will be speaking, myself, of course, Robert Spencer, and a couple of other surprises that we're trying to just make sure their schedules don't conflict. And they should. So I would actually stay tuned to Atlas for updates on that, but I'm definitely doing that event. And I'm doing the Jessica Mokdad Human Rights Conference on the anniversary of the honor killing of Jessica Mokdad in Dearborn, Michigan. We'll be at the Hyatt, who gave us the space because we were canceled by the Hyatt when the Islamic supremacists were crying that Pammy was speaking. Anyway.
What day's that? I'm like 20 minutes from Dearborn.
Oh, you should come. It's April 29th. It's 5 p.m. at the Hyatt in Dearborn. It's called the Jessica Mokdad Human Rights Conference. And you should come up and say, hey, you are on my show, and tell me who you are, because I'd love to meet you.
Well, Pam, I should hook you up with Karen Jeanette. I'm going to pronounce her last name, Jarrett. She's a military, also ran for Congress here in South Carolina. She didn't succeed, a very good conservative, very bright and attractive woman. And she would be someone you were interested in, because I saw her at the convention, and I think she's getting ready for another run to take another charge at a Democratic rhino here.
How great is that?
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
so what I'll do is...
we certainly promote her. I'm candidates. It's very important that we get behind candidates who get it.
Yeah, I'm going to make a note to contact her, because, like I said, I saw her briefly at the thing, because she was saying hi to me, and someone else was talking to me at the same time. You know how that happens?
Of course.
or hi to you, and 10 other people are talking to you at the same time.
Yeah, it's always like that, but it's all good, and it's good to connect, and it's good to to keep a loosely formed network of people that that can move the ball forward.
Yeah, well, better late than never. Certainly glad you came. You are not only beautiful, but your words are very inspiring, my friend, of conservative
value. Oh, you're
a big man.
Again, forgive me for being late. My life is like Las Vegas. There are no clocks.
Well, Pamela, since you're going to be in Dearborn on the 29th.
I'd love to see you.
Only way we're going to make up is I'm a lot of good food in that area.
Wait
a minute.
Wait a minute, Mike. Whose show is this?
Well, Annie, they just ran a piece on me. I'll have to send you the clip. The local news called me the gangster of the local area. So you know, a guy like me, I got to up my image. Maybe I got to be seen with people like Pamela. Yeah, right.
If the media is bad-mouthing you, then you, sir, are doing something right.
One of my employees said, if you making so much money doing this, how come you driving a car with a different colored door on it? I said, you know, it's a good – I'd like to know that myself.
No, tell him that you're fashion boy.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Pamela. I can't even thank you enough.
I would like you to come back on.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And from one New Yorker to another who's now in South Carolina, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Bless you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man, that was a fantastic, fantastic interview here with Pam Geller. And I do apologize, and she did, for being late. But we did end up with a fantastic show here, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely awesome. And, you know, the thing is that probably one of the most cool things about having somebody who tells it like it is, there is no political correctness to whereas maybe you use this word instead of that word. She told it like it is. And you know what? She's right. David versus Goliath, David won. And that's our fight.
Well, that is true. That is true. I want to say thank you to everyone that's in the chat room. A shout out to Dr. Jones. His show, you got to see the C. Robert Jones show here on BTR. We got Dirty White Trash. Got another guest still hanging in here, Malcolm X, Sexy Sammy, and Toddy Littman. And just before we close out, I wanted to bring back Toddy and Thomas for the final words so we can get what's going on with them. So, Toddy, you go first.
Well, I have admired her forever, and I even used her video about Nairobi to try and help people understand what is a possible agenda of Obama right now. But I'm always on the outside looking in, it seems. So, you know, I guess that's just how it is. One of these days, I mean, I've tried, I've sent her stuff, I've tried, I can't reach her. And not a lot, just once in a while. But hopefully one day I'll be able to actually bring up what it seems Obama's trying to do here that he did in Kenya,
yes.
That Odinga did in Kenya, and it seems like that's. I mean, the guy is a Shiite. He supports anything that's Shiite. Everything he's doing is to divide, and there's a reason for that. If you look at governmental structures, and so maybe, you know, like I said, one day.
Well, actually, just to follow up on that bit with Kenya, they have now actually definitely said that, what's the name of this group? There is a Kenya group that is now definitely linked to Al-Shabaab, which is Al-Qaeda. And let's see, the Muslim Youth Center is
okay.
Definitely now in Kenya, is now definitely linked to Al-Shabaab. So obviously Obama wanted that.
Are you familiar with Odinga's becoming prime minister?
Vaguely. Vaguely. But we're running down to our last few minutes, Toddy. You want to tell everyone what your blog is?
Yeah, well, changingwind.org.
Okay, great.
And I've got something up there about Romney right now.
Oh,
so.
Fantastic.
Okay.
So we'll tell everyone to go to changingwind. Say that right, Annie. Right. We got it. Changingwind.org. Hey, Thomas.
Thanks.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, you got a few minutes about your show and what's going on.
Oh, well, I was inspired by your interview, so I shout out Pam and emailed to her AOL account, so hopefully she'll get that about doing an interview. And then tonight, Pastor C.L. Bryant's going to be back on my show again to talk about the world premiere of the Runaway Slave movie, which premiered last Friday in Los Angeles.
Okay. Put it up. We're going to be closing in our chat room in a minute. So why don't you, when you do your show tonight, tell everyone where to go to find your show and put that info up on your show.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm out of the chat room because we're in an archive.
Okay. Well, then we hope whoever's listening to the archive will hit your show tonight, Thomas.
Yeah.
All right. And unfortunately, I won't be able to be there.
I know.
Okay. You take care,
well,
Thomas.
Well, Thomas, I might be joining you for your show. So hopefully I can make it.
Well, Mike, we had an absolutely fantastic show. We actually went 20 minutes over, and I'm glad Pam Geller did manage to get in with us. I was a little nervous because, you know, being a featured show,
that's why when she jumped in, I didn't, for a lot of people who don't know, you're obviously dealing with a couple of different very hard things. That's why I kind of jumped in. Sorry, I kind of pushed you aside a little bit, but dang, she's fine. Woo-wee. She was wearing, I don't know what convention, but if you Google it, it's like the fifth picture down. She wearing some skirt. Man, oh, man.
Oh, I know which picture you're talking about. I kind of like said, no, if I put that up, and I said, maybe it would have got more people.
Well, I commented when GGT was in there. I'm like, you checking that out? He's like, dang, man. He goes, but anyway. But also, yeah, it was a great show, Annie, and, you know, our prayers are with you, and hopefully we obviously know the outcome, sadly, but, you know, that's life, and, you know, our prayers are with you and your family, so.
Yeah, I thank you. We've got to bring Kismet over so she can have her final little cat nap and go to kitty heaven. It's breaking my heart, and as much as I don't want to do this, I mean, I don't want to see her in pain, and it just tears me. And she's been with me 16 and a half years, and she's my shadow.
Yeah, well,
anyway,
it looks like Mike is your new shadow now.
Well, just let anyone know that's still listening to the archives that this Friday we're going to have your favorite person, Chad Conley, on. And a matter of fact, I saw him at the convention, and when I stepped into the elevator, he ended up stepping in behind. He looked at me, smiled, and I says, so when I told you coming on my show when you were running your campaign that you would get elected, you didn't believe me. He goes, I believe you now.
That's awesome. And, you know, you got to love people that, regardless of whatever, Annie, they stand up for true conservative values. It's not a popularity contest. It's a mission. And you know what? If we have to go it alone, we go it alone. Either way, we will be victorious in the end. And, yep, I'm looking forward to Friday's show. I really like that guy, so I'm getting excited.
Okay. All right.
You have a good one, and we'll see you down the road.
We thank everyone here in Blog Talk Land for listening to Sudden Sense on Blog Talk Radio. Please remember to tune back in on Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our guest will be the South Carolina GOP, Chad Conley. Good night, have a safe week, and God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Stand up. don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.